Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 3rd, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we continue our tour of Minneapolis breweries in connection with our travels to HomebrewCon. Nick Jute of 56 Brewing serves Steve Wilkes and me samples of some delicious beers and gives us some practical tips on how to brew similar beers at home. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. Don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can find me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com, click on our ad on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes or Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the iHeartRadio app as well. And if you do us a favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment there, that will help new listeners find us. And if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. This past Thursday, I posted an episode of Basic Brewing Video where Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com and I made and tasted a hopped kombucha. Very tasty stuff. There were a lot of good comments and questions on the YouTube post. A bunch of you are making kombucha, and this is an easy way to add another dimension to that endeavor. Just do some dry hopping. Like I say, it's very tasty, and I enjoy it at lunch. Just a little hopped sourness there after lunch. I am on the SCOBY front. I had a dramatic development in my little home brewery this past weekend. I returned from a camping weekend trip to find one of my SCOBY soured rye beers had blown up. That's the first bottle bomb I've had in a very, very long time. So I chilled down the rest of the batch to ensure that they're not going to suffer the same fate. So the investigation begins. I didn't boil the batch, if you remember my talking about this before, and my previous video episodes on my sour or kettle souring method. I only pasteurized after souring with the SCOBY, the kombucha mother. I only pasteurized at 180 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 minutes after the souring. So the questions arise, did some of the kombucha bugs survive that pasteurization into the fermenter and continue to work even after bottling? Was it just one infected bottle? I don't know. I don't know how likely that is. I sanitized them all in the dishwasher at the same time. Did I bottle before the US-05 was finished with its job, which, you know, might have been doing more slowly with the lowered pH? I dry hopped the beer in a Mr. Beer fermenter that I had also earlier dry hopped kombucha in. So, did I not get all the SCOBY bugs out of that vessel before I put the beer into it? There are lots of questions, and I'm hoping to find some answers. I'm planning to brew two batches of beer to investigate. First, I'm going to brew another SCOBY soured batch and boil this time for maybe 15 minutes. Also, I'm going to brew a standard pale ale and ferment that beer in the suspect Mr. Beer fermenter to see if it sours. So, anyway, I'm hoping to find out some answers, and I'll pass those along to you. I guess that's the risk of doing some weird experimental beers. You're going to run off the rails every now and then, so I will keep you posted. And, you know, it's all about being, open and honest about all this stuff. Sometimes, you know, if things work out, I'm going to tell you about it. And sometimes if things go wacky and don't work out, I'm going to tell you about that, too. It's all about experimentation. I'm starting to get questions for Zach Taggart. You remember Zach came onto the show last week to talk about setting up a homebrew lab at home. And Zach will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about plating yeast and other microbes and collecting and culturing samples. So send me your questions for Zach, either about last week's show or the next, and we'll get them answered. I'll share them with Zach, and he'll answer them via email, and then we can talk about them on the show, too. You can send those to james@basicbrewing.com. Now, a word from our sponsor, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. Desiree and Dave want to help you beat the heat this summer. So now through the end of August, their two favorite temperature controllers are 20% off. You can save 20% on both the Analog Johnson Controls controller and the Unistat 3 digital controller. And I can tell you that I have the Johnson controller on my kegerator, and it's not only great for fermentation, it's great for accurately controlling the temperature of my kegged beer and avoiding ice building up in the kegerator, which I've had a problem with in the past. You know, even ales need help during the summer around here to stay in the proper fermentation temperature zone. So head on over to highgravitybrew.com during the month of August and save 20% on those two temperature controllers. You don't even have to have a promo code. It's just on the price reflected on the site. And speaking of promo codes, if you use the promo code EBC75BB on highgravitybrew.com, you can save $75 on your electric brewery system or your Warthog controller purchase. And you've heard me brag endlessly on mine. I love it. Promo code EBC75BB to save $75 on family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Well, one of the perks of this job is being able to spend some time with talented brewers to taste their wares and pick their brains on how to improve my beers at home. And the best part is that we get to share those visits with you, of course. When we headed to Minneapolis for HomebrewCon, Kevin Welch of Boom Island Brewing generously took Steve Wilkes and me on a tour of area breweries. And our first stop that day was a good one with Nick Chute, head brewer at 56 Brewing. Okay, first of all, introduce yourself and tell us where we are.
All right, so my name is Nick Chute. I am the head brewer at 56 Brewing. We're in northeast Minneapolis.
And what are we drinking here, Dick?
We're drinking the Northeast Nectar, which is a honey wheat ale brewed with Minnesota wildflower honey from Bolton Bees.
It's delicious.
It's very good.
Now, describe the character, Steve. I'm putting you to the test.
It's very clean. I'm going to assume that you're using an American yeast, like a California Common of some kind. Yeah, I'm getting a head shake. So, yeah, in other words, it doesn't have that banana clove thing like a German beer would have. And the honey just pops right through. I mean, it really comes out almost braggadish. I mean, it's just like if you had a light summer wheat braggot.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. And it's not, it's as you would expect, it's not about the hops, but it's very nicely balanced.
Yeah, it's very floral. And I take it that most of the floral character is coming from the honey and not the hops?
Yeah, it's pretty lightly hopped at the end, and then I do all the honey is a Whirlpool addition. So post-boil, add that in, it has about 30 minutes to sit in the wort before I start chilling it.
And what percentage wise of the fermentables is honey?
Probably less than 10%. I don't know off the top of my head, but it is let's see, about a pound per keg.
That was very nice.
And what's the grain bill on it?
Grain bill is 2-row barley and white wheat malt.
So we dived into the details right away,
yeah.
Into the minutiae, but I didn't want to lose that. So tell us about the brewery and tell us about your background. And this is a beautiful place. We just took a tour of the brewing setup, and it's just a gorgeous big stainless system, and the tap room is nice and sort of modern looking, but there's, you know, kind of a rustic feel with the woodwork. But I take it that the brewery didn't start out this fancy.
Yeah, it definitely did not. So we actually started or opened our doors 2 years ago in a space a couple blocks away, and it was a 700 square foot industrial garage with converted milk pasteurization tanks for the brew house itself. So we were running about 5-barrel system there. So that was kind of like a large-scale homebrew setup. After being there for 2 years and having aspirations for a much larger setup and a full tap room, we definitely had some motivation to make it very nice looking, but also exactly what we wanted. So coming into this space, in terms of the tap room, we wanted to keep a lot of the feel that we had with the old space, themes of kind of industrial metal as well as wood. We really focused on that. So the back of the bar, which is over our bathrooms and then has an upper level mezzanine, is all a steel beam structure, and then that's accented with wood. Our bar top is white oak that we got rough cut, and we planed ourselves. Tried to, you know, with our bar back and tap handles, the same steel and wood in there.
Well, it works. It works very well. What's your philosophy of the beers that you brew? If you were to give like an elevator pitch of who 56 Brewing is, what would it be?
Our kind of mission statement for that is that we brew beers that we like to drink. I myself look at recipe creation and brewing beer as, you know, almost like a food science aspect or a culinary aspect, blending flavors together to get a good balance that's, you know, very drinkable, but really showcasing the ingredients that I'm using. So like this, the Northeast Nectar here, you can taste the wheat and the honey, and it all blends together very nicely.
Do you have an urgent question?
Just saying.
Making sure the brewery work is being done as we're talking here. So talk about your background. How did you get into brewing yourself?
So when I was 21, I really wanted to start homebrewing. Finally made the commitment to myself to go one day and buy a starter kit, and from that day on I was hooked, and brewing as much as I could. And it was kind of always a dream in the back of my head that, oh yeah, maybe I'd like to get into full scale brewing one day. And talking to people I knew occasionally about potential jobs or internships at breweries. My landlord, who is our founder, Cale Johnson, around that time was starting 56, and he knew that I brewed beer, and so talked to me, and I came on to help out with the brewing, and we just went from there.
Wow.
And so, yeah, 2 years, about 2.5 years later, now we're in our tap room that we dreamed of, and it's going well.
A meteoric rise. That's very nice. Is there something else that you would like to sample? I can't get over the honey character of this beer.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Usually honey tends to dry out, and so that you're able to keep it as light and fresh in terms of the flavor is really quite stunning. I almost wondered if you hadn't used honey malt in it, but no. Yeah.
No, I think originally we did have some honey malt in the grain bill, but I found with the very last minute addition of honey, it wasn't really necessary. Mm. And then with our new brew house and having a whirlpool, that's really been able to work out well for me. But yeah, we can try another style.
We're being greedy here, Steve. Sorry. We have to say that Kevin Welch from Boom Island Brewing Company is our tour guide today, and he's bringing us around. He treated us to some West Falederan 8 up on his up on the roof of his building. It was very delicious. We're going to wind up there later on. Not sure what order these episodes are going to run, but we're going to wind up there later on. This is a beer that's slightly darker than the first one. What do we got here?
All right, so this is our nose hair bender. It is a dry hopped IPA. Uses Simcoe, Centennial, Amarillo, and Citra hops added in solely in the whirlpool and then dry hopped. It's about 7%, and nicely aromatic. We get tones of, we describe it as like a tangerine grove.
I can see that. So all of the hops are added post-boil, essentially?
Correct. So really trying to remove some of that bitterness and get a very flavorful and aromatic IPA.
It's delicious. I'm supposed to say that. No. It. What I really like about it, as much as the hop discussion, is I like the kind of, there's a warm grain note at the end of my palate, at the end when I drink it, that's kind of biscuity, kind of nut-like, and I really like that a lot about this beer. And it's very well balanced, I think. In other words, none of the flavors jump out at me like, oh my God, that's all about hops or malt, or you know, pick your poison. So yeah, that was my thumb going up.
your rheumatism's not acting. Otherwise, we could hear it.
That's right.
You know, when I tasted it, I was, you know, the hops are really in your face. I mean, it's just like, wow, the hop character of this beer. But like you said, this is not a bitterness bomb. So, how would you classify this? Is this a Midwest IPA as opposed to, you know, a West Coast or a Northeast?
I think it's probably going more towards the Northeast style. The only thing that's really not quite there is, you know, that yeasty haze. But kind of trying to take away from the West Coast style that still has the bitterness up front, and go more towards the East Coast.
Isn't Yeasty Hayes, wasn't he your favorite cowboy actor?
No, he was a blues musician.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeasty Hayes, he played down at Beale Street a lot.
Welcome to our pun. Welcome to our world. So if you were going to duplicate this beer on the homebrew scale, talk about a bit about the temperature range of the whirlpool and how long the hops spend in it, you know, because it's a different dynamic if you're brewing, you know, 5 or 10 gallons of beer. It's a lot easier to chill that down than it is on your 20-barrel system, right?
Sure.
So talk about, if you were going to duplicate this on the homebrew scale, how long would you have to spend in, you know, the sweet spot, the temperature range, to get these wonderful hop flavors? And there is bitterness in the beer.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not, you know, like astringent, overly bitter bitterness.
So essentially the whirlpool, it's immediately after the boil, I pump it into the whirlpool, and that probably sits around 200 degrees, and that's for 30 to 40 minutes. So, you know, putting that in the homebrew scale, I would right at flame out, add all those hops, and probably let it sit for as long as you can before that temperature drops below, say, 180, and then start chilling it.
Nice. So yeah. You don't get the vigor of the boil, you know, to sort of
knock the alpha acids around and kind of isomerize them. But there is kind of a gentle, I don't know if gentle is the right word, but there is sort of a gentle bitterness there along with this wonderful hop character.
Well, yeah, and I really wanted to comment on your comment of leaving it alone until the temperature naturally drops below pasteurizing to where it becomes a little dangerous bug-wise, because one of the things that I do, I mean, I grew up doing this as a brewer, is I try to start chilling too quickly. And there's, you know, you don't have to rush. The second you've taken it off the boil, you have to turn it into ice water. And a lot of homebrewers particularly think that if they don't do that, their beer will be ruined mystically, but it won't. Patience is important.
Yeah, I guess to add to that, you know, the only thing by waiting longer to chill it, you're really only adding more bitterness from any hops that are early on in the boil, right, as long as you're staying above that pasteurization level for temperature. Once you get there, then yes, you want to chill it down quick to induce the cold break, but as long as you're, you know, I think it's 175, as long as you're above that, you're good. It's a safe beer.
So how adventurous do you get on your tap list here? I mean, what's the farthest, you know, the weirdest that you've ever gotten?
Oh, that's a good question. So prior to the tap room, we were only selling growlers out of our space and then kegs to bars and restaurants. So we were playing it fairly safe in terms of adventureness. So coming into here, I'm going to start doing some styles that may not sell well to people who want to buy a growler, but when you're buying a pint of it, should sell a little better. One thing that I will be doing soon is a double IPA brewed with all Simcoe hops, and then it has bourbon barrel-aged honey added to it. So I'm looking forward to that, as well as probably in the fall time doing some more, additions like maple syrup, and make some heavier beers.
Nice. So using the same theory with the honey wheat beer and adding the honey kind of towards the end and preserving those volatiles from the bourbon barrel-aged honey. Wow.
Yeah, especially with the bourbon barrel-aged honey, I really want that to be more for flavor than for alcohol content.
Right. Is there one more sample that you'd like to share?
Yes.
Being greedy as usual. This is the first step. We just do this for the beers. Yeah.
Don't you have that on your business card? Greedy as usual?
Yeah. Sure.
Pretty sure I saw that.
It's my side business.
Yes, that's right.
Oh my.
Oh, lovely.
Oh. Now that I'm gonna venture. The bubbles are acting kind of I'm wondering if this is a nitro tap. This looks like a beautiful dark beer. Talk about this beer.
All right, so being 56 Brewing, I had to do something special for our 56th batch. So this is a Russian Imperial Stout. It is brewed with some chocolate rye malt, is one of those interesting ingredients I used. It's about 9.5%. And we do have some of that aging in some Buffalo Trace barrels at the moment.
Wow, there you go. Where's the cot?
You can't have a nap. We got other places to go. Wow, that is wonderful. I have to comment, you know, we've had three beers. All three beers are super clean, you know, super
very clean.
Super well done.
Yeah.
You've got your new gear and you know how to use it. So describe the characters you're getting out of this beer.
This is a very big, it's very chocolatey. I kind of get some little vanilla notes in it, and I get a little roasty. I don't think it's a coffee beer, but I get a little coffee-esque at it. Is that?
I can see that. It's got, if I remember off the top of my head, so chocolate rye, is one of the one of the ingredients there. I think basically a caramel 120 and maybe some flaked oats, if I remember. But primarily the chocolate rye and the caramel 120 are really going to be the driving factors in the flavor.
I'm getting kind of a nutty, like a roasted nut flavor as well.
You don't want to say that too much.
Behave.
Yeah, I agree with all that. It's what I'm impressed with is how smooth it is. It's just kind of lays on the palate, and it's very delicious. And I know that's a ethereal word, but it's like a really good piece of chocolate cake, or a really, you know, it's very dessert-like. I couldn't drink a pint of this. I could drink a half a pint.
Yeah, I'm assuming you don't serve it in full pints.
We do not. We serve it in tulips, and it's definitely a one tulip beer.
Yeah.
It is so good. I'm assuming that the rye adds to the chewiness of this beer, right? I mean, what percentage of rye?
Probably 5 to 10. Again, I don't remember off the top of my head, but that would be a contributing factor to it.
I'd like to know how you go about developing the recipe. So you had an idea to brew this beer. How do you go about bringing it from just in your head into the brewery?
That's a great question. Sometimes I ask myself that as well. I always start with kind of where I want the end product in my head. And then I would say I tend to start with the specialty malts and get, you know, at least a list of which ones I want to put in there before even going to any percentages of what those are, and get all the ingredients I want to have in, and then place them together with, you know, the levels I think would be appropriate to balance with each other, and then lastly add my base malt in just to get to the gravity that I want.
Huh. And do you brew some pilot batches? I mean, I'm assuming you do of some kind, but no.
I've found I did when we started, but I quickly learned I was spending far more time on the brew house here than, you know, my homebrew system. So I knew what the beer would turn out better here than if I were to do it on a homebrew scale without the temperature control that I have, because that was a really big factor, was just having that temperature control on fermentation is going to dial in your beer's flavor profile so much more than if you don't have that temperature control. I've gone to, unless it's kind of like a crazy beer that I have no idea how it's going to turn out, I'm pretty confident that brewing it full scale first time will turn out well.
And that is a sign that you should brew often. Because if you brew often and you know your system and you know your ingredients, you know what things taste like, you can kind of shoot from the hip.
Yeah, for sure.
So I get the picture, at least from these three beers, that you don't like complicated recipes. It doesn't seem like there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that and, you know, a pinch of this and a pinch of that. It seems like that you keep things pretty basic.
Yes, I would say that for myself. I think keeping a recipe simple is going to give you a far better balance. Thought out ingredient, you know, the some of these have a lot of different ingredients in the grain bill or in the hops, but you got to start simple and add things in strategically. And sometimes, you know, simpler is better. The honey wheat ale has two row and wheat, and that's all it needs.
Yeah.
And they're plenty complex. There's plenty going on in here.
Sure.
Without it being like, you know, something that you got to wade through. There's plenty of layers of flavor in there without all the additional ingredients. We haven't talked about yeast at all. So what's your approach to yeast, not only in these beers, but the other beers, and yeast and fermentation control and all that?
So yeast, I think, plays the biggest role in your flavor. For all my ales, I use the same yeast, White Labs California ale, and while using the same yeast, just by changing the fermentation temperature a couple degrees, you can get, you know, more sweetness, more dryness, more esters. You can get a lot of variation in beers and styles just based on temperature. And then I've tried a couple different, you know, house yeast strains, and ended up with this one just because of how well it brings out the flavors and really crisps up the beers. Beers that I thought were great on other yeasts now, like, expand that the flavors. You can really pull them out.
Well, it's interesting that you say that that you're using the, you know, that California ale yeast, and playing with the different temperatures. I have always been under the misconception that strain was fairly forgiving as far as the temperature range. You know, it's not so expressive, you know, of different characteristics. You know, unlike maybe a Belgian yeast strain or something like that. But you find that you really can, by fine-tuning, you know, the temperature, really get some different performance out of that.
Yeah. I mean, and as you just said, I would agree with that. Based on some other yeasts, I've found this one doesn't, you know, I forget what the yeast was, but I had one I was using before that I could change literally at 1 degree for fermentation temperature. I would get a lot of changes in the flavor profile, you know, so this one's, it is a little more forgiving, but, you know, if you're looking at the high ends versus the low ends, you're going to get some good changes.
But you know your product, you know the different batches, and you can tell, you know what's going on. You get the history of again, brew more often.
Yeah, that's right.
Play with your beer, play with your variables, brew more often. Should we beg for one more beer?
Sure.
Would we be imposing if we asked for one more?
No, not at all. I'm just trying to think which one. I think everybody should look at beer like this, but the canary in the coal mine is always the Pilsner and the light lagers.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So probably should have started you guys off with that, but now that your palate's really warmed up, we'll finish with that.
There you go. We'll have the palate cleanser.
give me a Coke.
How about a beer?
Okay. As long as you're buying.
I like this job. I think it's going to work out.
Yeah.
No, I love the architecture. I love the design of this place.
Oh, check out the flag of Minnesota.
It's a map.
Well, yeah. I mean, map.
Made out of wood.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. So now we got it. We're doing a nice, creamy head on there. Nice and clear.
Cheers.
Cheers. Did that kind of like we're getting married there.
Crossed
arms. So talk about this beer while we're sampling.
Sure thing. So this is my Czech Pilsner. Try and brew it as true to style as possible. Malt is from the Czech Republic. Saz hops and Pilsner yeast. And it's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Fermentation on a Pilsner is definitely, or any lager, is very important, and there's two ways to go about it: fermenting cold the whole time and producing very little diacetyl at all during the fermentation, which does not involve a diacetyl rest, or starting it warmer, lowering it down, and then raising the temp back up for a diacetyl rest. If I have the time for the fermentation, I prefer to start it cold and ferment at around 50 degrees. Adds about a week in total to that brew cycle, but it gives you a real crisp product at the end.
So how long between, I'll just say, the start of fermentation and it hits the tap, how long does that process take for this beer?
About a month.
I like it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's grainy. It's got that kind of noble hop character. And I say grainy in a good way. You know, you can taste the grain. It's nice and crisp and clean, but it's got enough flavor to keep it really, really interesting.
Oh yeah, I'd be proud of this beer. I mean, if I brewed this at home, I'd be very proud of it. This might be. I like all the beers. This might be my favorite.
It's my favorite too.
I really like it a lot.
Stepping out there. Well, Ed, I like it, but I also like that. Well, I like all of them.
I like all of them. I'm splitting hairs, but.
Or you're bending hairs.
Well, that was
nose hairs.
That's right. Don't tell my wife. But this beer just really rings all the bells for me. I really like it a lot.
Nicely done. Man. Yeah, I think you've kind of taken us around the world here as far as flavors, and you're showing off because each one of these is very well done. So I certainly appreciate the hospitality, appreciate the time, I appreciate the knowledge, and I hope we can make it back one day and sit here and spend time and drink full pints, and pay for them.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I appreciate you guys coming in. Happy to talk and show you guys the beer we've got going on here.
Well, thanks again to Nick. Steve and I, as you could tell, were really impressed by those beers, and I'm grateful to Nick for the time and information. I'm planning to integrate some of those tips into some upcoming brews very soon, and we'll have lots more coming from Minneapolis. In the coming weeks. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Good Cook Touch High Temperature Hamburger Meat Chopper and Onkyo TX8020 Stereo Receiver. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. That's all until next time. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is brought by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.